Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod. That's right, Wonder Pod, episode 63, no Sony edition. I promise, as I'm looking at the other screen to make sure there's no Sony stories up. Joining us this week is Glacinator.
Hello everyone, I'm back from the dead. I mean, finals week. Glad to hear from all of you again, or you're hearing me.
Something like that. Yeah, call in now. Finals week is pretty much like being dead. Also joining us, he doesn't have to take finals. He just has to throw mail in the river. Patrick.
What is going on, people? The return of Glacinator confirmed. He is a zombie. Back from the dead. That's right. I haven't had to take a final at university for a long time. Thank God.
Feels like forever, doesn't it?
Yes.
Technically, it really wasn't all that long ago, but it does feel like forever.
Yep.
I've had a couple people go, oh, you should go back and get your master's. I don't think so. I don't care.
You stop, you'll never go back.
The people that, hey, to any audience members that have gone back after graduating college, and I don't really know the age demographic of our audience, but any of you that have, you have my respect. Because no, even if it's being paid for, even if I don't have to pay a dime, no, I don't want to go back to school. So our advice to you, young Glacinators, get all the education you want now, because in 10 years, you're going to be just like us, going, no.
Only a zombie.
Only yeah, a zombie. And you'll still be a zombie. Patrick, what have you been playing this week?
What have I been playing? Well, I just yesterday, brand new game, I guess, downloadable game on Xbox Live Arcade. I would say maybe on the PlayStation Network, but yeah, you know all about that. So definitely, it's on Xbox Live Arcade. Gatling Gears is what it's called. I've seen a few of the trailers for this over the last few weeks, and I've been pretty interested in it. It's basically a top-down shooter done with 3D graphics. What are they called? Dual stick? What's that called when you got the two? What do they call those shooters with the dual stick? Is that what it is? Dual stick? I don't know. Whatever you call that.
Twin sticks.
There you go. Dual, twin, whatever. It's a twin stick shooter. You're in little mechs jumping around the place. That's not bad. I thought it would be better. It's not great, but it's not bad. Pretty nice visuals in it. It has a co-op mode, a local co-op mode. So if you've got a friend or a brother or a sister or a zombie, you can try that out. It also has apparently online co-op. I don't know if the demo has online co-op or not. Probably does. I think the game would be better online, much like that other game that Bruce McGee and I did the two-man review on. I think that game would have been not as fun with one person. So I'm sure Gatling Gears on Xbox Live Arcade would be pretty good with another player. It's okay single player. I recommend people check it out. It's kind of fun. One thing I don't like about it is the price. I think it's $15, which you might say, hey, that's not a lot of money, but when you compare a $15 game to all the good $10 games and $8 games and the games on sale on Xbox Live Arcade, it's kind of overpriced in that way. I didn't think it was as good as it could have been. It's fun. I played right through the demo until I got to this big boss, and then it kind of just fades away and says, buy the full version. If this game was on sale or if it was even 800 points, I'd probably pick it up. The jury's still out on it. It's good. Check it out if you've got someone to play it either online or your buddy sitting beside you. I think it would be pretty good. That's Gatling Gears. Came out yesterday. What else? Well, I finally finished Mortal Kombat Story Mode. I was having problems with it. Basically, the last fight is Shao Kahn versus Raiden. Spoiler. And it's so cheap. But I mean, the computer is so cheap. The computer is always cheap in Mortal Kombat, so you know that going into it, but yeah, it was pretty good. Finished it off. Now that I finished the story, it's good. I mean, I like the changes that this new slash alternate version of reality of Mortal Kombat is. I like the direction they're going in. Some major changes for some major characters, which I wasn't expecting. I mean, one of the characters that's all the way from Mortal Kombat 1 is significantly changed in this storyline. A lot of people get killed, which are unexpected, and basically the ending of this game is the beginning of Mortal Kombat 4. So the entire story for this game is mostly Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and then a bit of Mortal Kombat 3. Quite well done. Anybody, like I said before, interested in the original two or three Mortal Kombats will really like this. As for all the people who die, well, they could always bring them back. I hope they don't. I hope the next one goes with a whole bunch of new characters. There's still quite a few left alive, but with the Outworld and with the Nether Realm and with all the magic and technology, they could easily come up with ways of bringing these people back. But hopefully they don't. Hopefully many of the people they killed off, they keep killed off. One thing I noticed about the game playing, when you're playing up against one of the bosses, there was one part where it's, I forget what character I was, but I was fighting Kintaro and Goro at the same time. Lots of fun. And the D-pad seems to not work 100%. I mean, there's times like this, or times where you're fighting Shao Kahn, or times when you just need the D-pad to work perfectly, and it doesn't always work that well. I was talking with, Mysterious Gamer Man X, and he was saying maybe the new controller with that different D-pad might be better, but, you know, and then there's always the option of getting one of those fighting sticks. Those fighting sticks cost like $100, which I don't think I'll be doing that. So anyways, final verdict on Mortal Kombat. I still have a ton of stuff to do. I just finished the story mode. I got lots more stuff to do. Really good game. I like what they did with it. Aside from Gatling Gears and Mortal Kombat, that's about all I've been playing, really, aside from the usual WonderPod crew getting together. It was a couple days ago with Glazinator, Zombie Glazinator himself, and Audio Master G. We were playing some Monday Night Combat. What else was I playing? I was playing some Halo Reach with Audio Master G also. So aside from that, that is all I've been playing this week.
I was going to say, hey, we could do that. We could torture the WonderPod Online people with another two-man review of Gatling Gears, but not for 1,200 fucking points.
Yeah, it's a bit overpriced for what it is. Like I was saying, there's so many games out there and so many sales on games that, you know, who knows? Maybe 6 months from now, we'll be 600 points and we'll do a two-man review.
By the way,
go ahead. That's the one thing about it. Like, I didn't know the pricing point of this, and I saw the videos for it, and I said, and that's exactly what I was thinking, Bruce. I was like, hey, here's another two-man review for us to do, similar to what we did before, and that was lots of fun. And then when I looked at the price, I was like, yeah, maybe we'll wait for a price drop.
The other thing, too, is if you think $100 is bad for fighting sticks, according to my sources in the nerd fighting or fighting nerd realm, to get a good one so you can actually be competitive online, $250.
Holy cow. Yeah,
it's the bottom, and the most expensive I've seen, it's a Horyu fighting stick with these certain kind of buttons that came on like some Street Fighter arcade cabinets, and I can't remember the company that makes the buttons. $500.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
But according to the people I know that have played them, even I could be good with a fighting game if I wanted to spend $500. That's how sensitive and shit they are.
That's always been the issue with at least the 3D ones and stuff. The D-pad, just not quite responsive enough, I think.
Yeah, you dislocate your wrist and finger sometimes, but I just never understood why the D-pad even has to be involved. I mean, you got two triggers and two bumpers and four buttons and a start select if you really need it. You know, that D-pad, the Xbox D-pad's not that good for anything, really, except like quick menus in RPGs. Past that D-pad sucks, so I can't even imagine how miserable it is in a fighting game.
It's not bad until you need really precise. It's like when you're fighting the Emperor, you can't screw up more than once or he'll just rape you, right? Whereas if you're playing a game even on medium and you're just at the beginning, if you screw up, big deal, you might miss a move or you might, you know, not teleport when someone's swinging. But when you're fighting the final bosses like the Kintaro and Goro tag team or the Emperor himself, one little mistake with the D-pad and you're dead. And that's the frustrating part with it, really.
Well, and like you said, Mortal Kombat's always been known for being cheaper. Even when I ventured into trying to play fighting games, I always stuck with Street Fighter because it always seemed like it was less cheap than the Mortal Kombat series.
Cheapality.
Yeah. Oh no, the funny one, you should go to Penny Arcade. They've got one of their PA TVs. They did a strip on Mortal Kombat, but it actually shows Gabe and Tycho playing the game. And like, through the whole entire segment of the video where they're playing the game, both of them are going, how'd you do that? How'd you do that? And having no fucking idea how they did these finishing moves. I think that's pretty commonplace.
What's that?
Button smashing is a strategy.
It is.
Well, that's what they were saying, because it's like, you could practice all the moves and then some smartass just punches all the right buttons and takes you out. Glacinator, you've been gone for a while, now back from the dead, or undead, which you may have issues with Audio Master G, or several of our other fine folks. What have you been playing?
I of course been playing some Minecraft, you know. I'm starting to mess around with texture packs now, and I'm thinking I might make my own since I have Photoshop and everything. I can go in and edit pixels, which would be interesting. And also, since I'm back home, I am back on my good internet. Thank God. The internet in the dorms is terrible. So I might finally get around to making a server for us, you know, which would be pretty cool. I'll look into that. Other than that, yesterday I went back and replayed through the first Portal to get ready for the second one, because I went and bought that today at GameStop. And yesterday I cracked out my 3DS and put in, Spirit Tracks, the second Zelda game on the DS after, Phantom Hourglass. And, I'm on the last dungeon. I just thought I'd just play through a little bit. And it's a Zelda game. It's pretty good. It gets a lot of hate for the train stuff, but if you can get past, running around on a train with a train conductor's hat for the first half of the game, then it's okay. But other than that, that's been pretty much it.
What do you need, like, hardware-wise to run one of these servers? Have you found that part out?
Hardware-wise, you don't really need anything. You just need your own IP address that you can link it to.
So, like, you don't need much of a processor or anything?
No, if you can run on a Mac, then I assume you can run on anything else. So...
Okay, so I found a box the other day that I'd forgotten about that just needs to have the hard drives cleaned out. It's got a pretty good processor.
Mm-hmm.
If you have trouble doing it on a spare Mac or whatever you're doing, hit me up on Facebook. We might be able to work something else out if you can walk my ass through figuring out how to do it.
All right.
As for me, I've pretty much been broke because I was sick for 15 days, and when you can't work, even when you can't work for your family, they don't pay you. Sons of bitches, especially when you work for your family. Here's a tip, kids. Don't work for your family, because they really don't want to pay you. So it's basically been broke dick gaming. That term may sound familiar. Sorry, I've been using it since 96, and I'm tired of not being able to use it. Anyways, total this week, I spent $5.69 on games, which would explain to you why you did not hear me mentioned in the WonderPod Online crew, because I haven't even turned on my 360. I take that back. I turned it on the other day for a non-gaming reason. I bought, with that $5.69, I bought, hold on here while I minimize Skype because I can't never remember the name of this game, Arcanum of Steamworks and Magica Obscura. Yes, that is the entire title of the game. Basically, I was grounding around on good old games. The reviews on the site, the user reviews, said if you liked Fallout 1 and 2, you'd like this game. It was a steampunk game. I'm not like uber writing blogs about it, over steampunk, but I do like it. I've always thought it's a good setting for video games. So I figured, screw it. $5, $6, I'm going to buy it. It's not a bad game, and the steampunk influences and setting are keeping me in it. I think I always find that to be very cool. As I said, there's two major problems with it. For a game of the era of Fallout 1 and 2 and the Baldur's Gate series right around that time frame, the graphics suck. If I'm saying that the graphics suck, trust me, they're just horrid. They could have done so much better than that. The second thing too is when you're scrolling around on the map, which is somewhat important to an RPG, It just has this limiting factor, like it stops you from scrolling any further than a set distance, which is ridiculous, because even in its time, I doubt it was very hard on graphics hardware. So I'm finding a lot that's really putting me off about it, but it's funny because the steampunk aspect is keeping me interested in it. So I don't know. I play for a couple hours here and there. I'm not really sure it's even worth $6 unless you really, really love steampunk, even more than I do, or you just really, really love obscure RPGs. Coupled with that, I've been playing some racing games for the PlayStation 2, because that's what I have them on. They came when I got my PlayStation 2 from a buddy. Let's see. And then finally, something I screwed around with when I was cruising the news blogs for the news we do, I saw that Angry Birds beta was available on the Google Chrome web store. And I thought, you know, I haven't checked out the Google Chrome web store in quite a while. They had some like solitaire games, crap like that. But I thought, hey, let me check out their store, see what kind of apps they got this now. It's been a few months. And believe it or not, if you use Google Chrome, which has its issues, but to my mind, it's right now the browser I use on everything. It has the least amount of faults to me. So if you use Google Chrome, you should really check out their app stores. Right now, I'm playing Angry Birds beta. It's free. How long it'll stay free, who knows. I even got my mother hooked on it. She loves it, which is hilarious. I'm playing the hijacked version of Super Mario Brothers, the one where you can play with Mega Man and Samus. Patrick, didn't you bring that up from the guy's website here, what, 10, 20 shows ago?
Yeah, I sure did. Brought you up a little... Yeah, oh, sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Just saying, I think Audio Master D has been there since then, and I think it's even more characters in it now.
Yeah, I saw probably 4 or 5 more, but it's on the Google Web Store. There's just a bunch of little games to try. The other one that I've got, and I don't want to open my browser, I forget what it's called. It's called something like Drawn on Bike. But what's really cool about it is you're basically a little stick figure on a mountain bike, and it's a lot like Trials HD, except all the maps are drawn by users. You can literally go there and either play the game on other maps or make your own map. Now, I can't draw to save my ass, so I haven't tried that aspect yet, although I might. If you got frustrated by the Trials HD because it does bring into play balance elements that are hard to control with either an Xbox controller or a keypad, it might not be for you, but it's a riot. It's just a blast to play through and see different maps people have drawn. And then the final one is a platformer. It's basically a little Army Man platformer. You shoot little Germans and rescue your captured comrades. So far, I think I've about 3 levels into it. The platforming isn't all that hard. It's more of an early Mario Brothers or Mega Man style platforming. Nothing super brutal. And it's fun, and they're great just little time wasters. If you don't like Facebook, if you're looking for a little bit more challenge than the Facebook games, I'd definitely check out this Google Chrome app. You know, I don't know how many a lot of these bigger names like Angry Birds and all that stuff are going to be free, but from what I've seen, I've tested it both on my laptop and on my desktop. From what I've seen, they don't seem to draw too many resources. You can have it open in one tab while you're browsing news or porn or whatever strikes your fancy in the other window. It was a little difficult on my laptop, but I didn't exactly buy it to be a powerhouse, so that didn't surprise me. Even on my older desktop, runs great. And like Patrick always says, if it's free, it's for me, and they're a riot. So if you're one of those like 5 people that's never played Angry Birds, here's your opportunity. Again, it says beta on it, so I don't know if that means eventually they're going to find a way to hook you into paying for it, or if they've just finally made enough millions off of Angry Birds that Google's paying them enough for it. But I definitely suggest you check it out. All you have to do, if you're not familiar with it, is open a new tab in Google Chrome, and you'll see your most frequently visited sites. Either above or below that, you'll see a link that says Web Store or App Store. Just click on that. Go to Games. Tons of stuff on there. It's great. Perfect if you're broke. Perfect if there's just nothing been out that you want to play. So that is what we've been playing, and what we've been playing segues nicely into what I'm going to call the final time we're going to kind of talk about social gaming, because this just didn't really fit as a news story, but I thought about doing it as a kind of a quick debate topic to see what these guys think. Dennis Dyack of Silicon Knights, one of the founders of Silicon Knights, who made quite a number of great games. He kind of had a rough patch there where, if you don't recall, the game Too Human came out. The demo for it or some of the preview builds for it were ugly as sin. It got trashed big time, and I think it mentally did something to Dyack because he's a little off. He really went nuts when Too Human got trashed. I have yet to play the finished version of the game. I never did hear how that all turned out. The reason I'm telling you that is because now he's running around on industry gamers and industry games or industrygame.biz and all the other blogs going, their social gaming thing is going to have a huge bubble and explode and it's never going to go anywhere. And we're just wasting resources. And that's why you see Activision not really getting into it. EA buying people. And it's just such a waste of time. Da, 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 and it just basically made it sound like sour grapes. Now, to do this a little different this week, my take is basically, yeah, the social gaming thing might have like a little bubble burst where studios who weren't prepared for a drop in people playing their games are going to go belly up. But you know what? We've had two or three of those in the big gaming industry. Patrick, do you think that at some point these social games are just going to explode and go away and we'll be back to hardcore AAA titles, or is this guy pretty much full of shit and brain damage from what happened to him before?
Well, everything seems to go in waves of popularity, but I don't think it's ever going to go away. Why will it go away? You know, video games just aren't only for the hardcore people. They aren't only for the basement dwellers or for the fanboys anymore. It's just become bigger, bigger, and bigger, you know? So I think games like the Facebook games and the Farmville games and any of these types of games, they're not going to go away. I think maybe they're enjoying the height of their success and maybe they're going to start to go down, but No, I think they'll still be here and they'll still play an important role. I think this guy's, I don't know what he's smoking, but yeah, I think he's a bit sour grapes.
Is this, well, I'll hold that thought. Glacinator, your thoughts, good sir.
I agree with Patrick on that. I may disagree that it's at the height right now. I still think it has a while to go before it reaches its height. But yeah, this guy is not thinking before he's talking. Social games aren't going anywhere anytime soon, as evidenced by the facts of so many grandmas playing Farmville. So it's here to stay for a while, I think.
We've discussed already, ladies and gentlemen, that it's not hurting your AAA titles, which was another one of his beefs. Is this, Patrick, is this, or no, excuse me, folks, Claysonator, is this sour grapes just in general, or is this jealousy because I didn't get there first?
I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, but I can definitely see where he's coming coming from with the jealousy part. The developers before social games, you know, you have to invest a lot into making a finished product, and now with these social games, it's not as much development basically. So I can definitely see where he's coming from for the jealous aspect of this.
Patrick, now that I'm done fucking it up, same question.
It just seems like a bitter guy altogether, really, and this is just one example of bitterness. I'm sure if somehow he had his foot in the door or somehow, you know, he had something to do with it, he would have a different story. So I don't know, I'd taken it more just a bitter person altogether. Like I said, if he was involved in it, he was making lots of money, I bet you he'd have a different story.
Two things we need to do to wrap this up. First off, Patrick nailed it, although Glacinator was right there with him. Dyack has never quite been right or quite been, it seems like, as coherent after the Too Human thing. But this is, I bring this up to our audience because the it's just more of, I don't know how to put this. This is just more of a kind of, look, audience, if you believe like this guy does, get over it. And for our final time, because we've talked about social games quite a few times, I'm kind of with Glacinator. I don't think they've reached their peak, but they're not going away. And I'll give you two examples why they're not going away, one of which I mentioned while we're discussing the games we played. Angry Birds. I don't know how many millions that has made selling at 99 cents a pop for Android and iPhone, but that was pretty much a nothing studio. If that doesn't sell you on it, look no further than the game Glacinator was talking about. Minecraft. We did a story a few weeks ago on how much money Minecraft has made, and that's just a group of guys who are making games for fun. It's not going away, and it shouldn't, because this just gives people the opportunity outside of going to school or outside of the standard method of getting into games development to show their stuff. And whether companies like Nintendo, who has said, oh, we're not working with garage developers or whatever silly shit Reggie was saying, you're going to get noticed. You don't even have to sell like Angry Birds and Minecraft has. If you put together something good to get some buzz on the blogs, people are going to look at you. Does it mean you're going to have your own huge AAA development studio someday? Probably not, but you're probably going to get a job with them. So I think the other developers, I think you need to pay attention to what Dyack's saying and not repeat it. Luckily, people like Cliffy B, as much as it pains me to say this, and some other guys are noticing that this is a better, it's almost like the minor leagues. It's almost like the minor leagues. Glacinator, isn't that kind of how you would look at it? Someone who's into art, someone who's thinking about taking that route into video games and making video games. Is that a fair assessment? It's kind of like the minor leagues, just make these little games and put them on Facebook or app stores?
Not necessarily, because you can make so much, there's so much potential money to be made that it is larger than the major leagues. Your product is possibly larger than, the big release of that year. So you can't just say that it's, little stuff, because a lot of people invest in that little stuff now.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some investment money being thrown around, but it's still to be the minor leagues, because a lot of times in sports minor leagues, most everybody's not going to make it. They're just there having fun in their youth. Only a few make it to the big time. Whether that's selling or going to work for a bigger development studio is kind of what I meant. But I see your point.
Okay.
Patrick, any final thoughts before we get out of this and go to whatever's next?
Not really. I think we've wrapped it up pretty good.
So there you go. Social games are not going away. Nope. Unless there's a really compelling story that doesn't involve flaky developers. You know who you are.
I'm too busy playing Farmville right now to answer that question. Hang on.
You don't play Farmville, you lion.
Who needs something?
You don't play Farmville, you lion sack of shit.
Ooh, see, there's a cow and everything going on. Farmville for life.
I don't even know what to say. I can see Ninja Wave playing Farmville, but not you. And not because it's a Facebook game. I just don't see you interested in farming. To be quite honest, Farmville does kind of surprise me, because it's like, and maybe I'm a little too close to the farming industry. I just look at that and I go, why do you want to play a game where you're harvesting wheat? It makes no sense to me.
That's right. Pornville, on the other hand, is something we should be working on.
That is true. Pornville, everybody would play.
Yep.
Except maybe grandmothers.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Glacinator goes there. Attaboy.
I think his journey to the dark side is almost complete with that one. Okay, it's time to move on before this gets even worse. Patrick and I are the most horrible instigators. Let's move away from the debate topic that's quickly going to the porn topic and move on to not Survivor Man G. I caught myself. He's back in space. Yes, that's, you heard us all correctly, or you heard me correctly. He's back in space. He's Cosmonaut G, and he's got a new message. Take it away, Cosmonaut G.
WonderPod security. On the line. External message probe detected. System analysis detects sender G. Data analyzed. Prepare for audio playback.
What's up, WonderPodOnline.com crew? Survivor Manchi here with another question for you gentlemen. Or should I say Cosmonaut G? Signing in. As you can hear, I've had to re-enter into my old spaceman spiff suit. I just arrived back at the Asteroid Analysis Research Station about an hour ago, and set the ship up to begin refueling. I then began to check out the place. Seems completely empty of life. Very quiet. It looks like the alien really trashed this place. In fact, I think he fucked me over again. The main computer system is destroyed. I can't fix this, even with all the space tools available to me. I lack the background to even know what to do or where to start. This means I cannot find the way back to Earth that I had planned. There are still some of the emergency systems online, like the gravity and air controls. Also, the food storage is set up on its own power system, so at least I won't starve. I'm kind of at a loss since my whole plan has been derailed. Got a question for you, and it's related to something that pisses me off, sort of like the scenario I'm in. We've all heard about parents who complain that their kids are exposed to violent and questionable video games and blame the industry because they are too lazy to consider the rating systems in place. I've often wondered if they also rent their children porno movies as well, and then blame the industry too. I stumbled across something interesting, a bit of research on the internet, if you will, showing the demographics of video game players. I'll send you guys a link. I realize that all surveys are questionable, and all stats are potentially skewed. However, this Wikipedia page points to numerous studies that show that the average gamer is 34 years old, and that, quote-unquote, the adult demographic is the fastest-growing segment of the video game market in America, with 32% of adults playing video games. So, if most gamers are actually adults, what allows for children to be exposed to adult-oriented games? Is this a result of stupidity, ignorance, laziness, or something else? Debate this one, WonderPod crew. It's about that time. Speaking of time, while I have plenty of it, I've got to figure out my next step. If you run into Audio Master G, or any of my family, let them know I am alright. But until next time, Osmonaut G, signing off. Oh, Diddy says hi too.
Signal complete.
Cosmonaut G, Spaceman G, whatever we want to call you. Kinda sucks you're back up in your old haunt there of your asteroid analysis station, as you like to call it, only apparently it's been trashed by the alien. I tell you, this all goes back to way back when you were playing NHL with him. I told you to let him win. He killed everybody else that beat him, but at least you got away. Anyways, your question. I hope you fuel up your ship, by the way, also, and find your way home. Then you'll be Homeman G or something like that. Homie G? I don't know. Anyways, your question's interesting. I didn't know that, at least according to some of these studies, and you know how I am about studies, but the average age of a gamer, according to these studies, is pretty old in some ways. You know, it's 34. I guess I can believe that. It's hard to, I mean, there have been gamers such as myself who've been around for a long time with our canes and our long beards, but I found that interesting. And on to your question, I don't know, what allows for children to be exposed to adult-oriented games? I mean, this is a pretty loaded question because there's so many things. I think two main things, really. The stores themselves, at least where I am and here in Canada, they seem to have a really strong lack of responsibility, and maybe the better thing is to say lack of accountability when selling, quote-unquote, adult games. Whether it's the staff are not trained properly, or whether just because here in Canada we don't give a crap about the ratings on video games, I don't know. But many times I've seen kids buy games that are adult games, and they're not even asked for ID. You know, you would think they'd be asked for ID. I'm sure it happens in some places, and someone in some store will send us some hate mail and say, you idiot, we never let anybody who looks like they're under the age of 20, you know, buy a game. But I've seen people way back since Doom 3 on the original Xbox some little kid in front of me go buy Doom 3, and the person at the electronic boutique store at the time didn't even think twice about selling it to them. So I think there's a very large, at least in my experience, again, some stores are probably better than others, but a large lack of accountability, responsibility amongst the stores themselves for allowing kids to have this. But ultimately, the main reason why, what allows our children to be exposed to these games or movies or whatever, of course, is the parents. It's always the parents. If the parents take the games away, if the parents are watching what these kids are playing instead of being in another room or something, they'd say, hey, wait a minute. How come my 6-year-old son is playing a game where you can rip someone's heart out and eat it? You know, maybe it's up to the parents to say, no, you can't play this. You're not an adult yet. So I think those are the two main issues. The lack of responsibility in the stores, and definitely the number one responsibility still is and always will be on the parent.
Gleisnyder, your turn as the younger member of the audience.
I agree with Pat 100%. The main problem is definitely bad parenting. There is a reason why the ESRB exists. There's a reason why your games say T or M or E. Parents, guardians, whatever, need to research what your kids are playing. It's the same deal with movies. You're not going to let your child just go watch freaking Saw or something, you know. There's a reason why that's rated R. There's a reason why Grand Theft Auto is rated M, you know. So parents or adults are trying to blame video games for violence and everything. It all comes down to the parenting, and you have to censor what your children watch. I know this may sound a little drastic, but, I actually wasn't allowed to play any T-rated games until I was 13, until I was a teenager. And I bought an M-rated game when I was 17, but I felt that I was old enough at the time to absorb that content. And, actually when I went to go reserve L.A. Noire today, I was asked for my ID because that's an M-rated game. So I do think stuff is getting better in terms of censoring and making sure the youth, if you want to call it youth, is absorbing material that they need to be absorbing at the right time. So like Pat, I agree the main problems are definitely the stores not making sure that their customers are the right age for purchasing items. And definitely number one problem is bad parenting.
Thanks, guys. I think children become violent after viewing Mario. There, that's all I'm going to say because
this is what happens when you go last.
How the fuck am I going to go third with that? it's like hitting cleanup when you're playing baseball by yourself. No, okay, joking aside, they have it right. Although I will disagree with Patrick a little bit on the store thing. In this manner. Down here, like Gleisnyder said, we have the ESRB. Yet politicians, mostly on the conservative side, mm-hmm. want to make laws specifically forbanning the sale of 18 games, yada, yada, yada. No, that's not what you do. Enforce the laws we got, folks. Find the shit out of companies like GameStop, Best Buy, Kmart, Walmart, Up Yours Mart, whatever. That's the problem. Find the living shit out of them for giving games to the inappropriate age groups. Much like Patrick, amazingly not in the GameStop in my town, even though that seems to be run by rabid ferrets. But in a GameStop in the town just north of me, yes, I saw a 9-year-old kid buy Halo Reach. There's something wrong with that. And I actually said something to the guy. You just sold. Oh, he said his mom was outside. Dude, we're in a mall. His mom's outside where? Outside in the outer space? I mean, I actually got in the guy's face because it's like you're giving the rest of us a bad reputation, you stupid asshole. Not that I work for GameStop. But aside from that, this whole violence of anything notion is so utterly ridiculous. And we've beaten it to death so many times. First, it was television. Oh, excuse me. I'll back up. Before that, I mean, you really want to go ancient? Shakespeare's plays, some of the other great playwrights from them dusty days that most people of this generation don't even know about or aren't even aware of. Some of those plays were banned for causing violence, or they might cause violence. Then you move closer to our own time. It was radio, and then television and Elvis's hips, and then heavy metal music with the down here in the U.S. with the PMRC freaking out about backwards lyrics, which Patrick and I were boring Gleason entered to death with because he wasn't even alive then. And then you move on to now to video games. Those two had it right. It doesn't even need to be the parents. It's adult influence. Whether you've adopted a child, whether the child's being raised by grandparents, single parent, two parents, doesn't matter. You know, if the premise that violent media creates violent people by itself, then I would be a mass murdering psycho, which should warn some of you trolls that like to screw with me. Because I have access to firearms, and I'm an adult, and I play violent video games. But you know what? I was taught right from wrong. So I don't. Kill people. Smack them occasionally, but I don't kill anybody. This debate can go on forever, and thank God Jack Thompson's no longer around, or we'd be having it every 3 weeks. The one thing I did find interesting is about... Cosmonaut G, in your question, was the average age being 34. That may have been, or may be right here in this very second, but I would say within a year, that is going to take a dramatic dip. Just because even you, with the casual games additions of, you know, grandmas and soccer moms and so on and so forth, I think there's a lot more younger people getting into DS and education software and all that kind of crap. So maybe it'll stay around there. Maybe the soccer mom quotient will push it to stay there, but I think it's going to take a dip. Still, it doesn't matter. You have kids playing games, and you're never going to convince some people that media isn't violent if you look at the examples I cited, how ridiculous it's been throughout hundreds and hundreds of years. So good question, Cosmonaut G. I hope you stay safe in the Escape Wonder Pod Part 2, and more than likely, we'll hear from you and Diddy next week. It's time to move on to news, and I want to kind of hit you with a little something before we do news. It finally dawned on me after doing two springtime chunks of this show that the month of May becomes a real pain in the ass, and it just couldn't quite place why it was becoming a pain in the ass with all these stories about rumors piled on top of rumors. I mean, it's the CNN type news stories, you know, and it was just driving me bonkers because it's like doing stuff that has some basis or foothold in reality is okay, but some of this stuff on big blogs even is just getting wild. And it, like I said, it finally dawned on me today, E3 is next month. And so that between that and the PSN nonsense, which we covered well enough last week, it got pretty difficult to find news. So I've got three stories. One of them is a little shaky. The other two are okay. First one, the shaky one, comes to us from Industry Gamers. Fallout New Vegas launch was too glitchy. Obsidian CEO apologizes. And that's basically all the guy does, is he promises that Dungeon Siege 3, which I am looking forward to if my computer will run it, won't be plagued with the same issues as the company's last title, Fallout New Vegas. Fallout New Vegas? How about Fallout New Vegas? How about Fallout 3? How about KOTR? How about Alpha Protocol? How about anything that was done on that Gamebryo engine? Obsidian? How about Oblivion? How about Morrowind? Here's my problem. Why even say it? First off, I knew people that just absolutely suffered their way through Fallout New Vegas and glitches and game-breaking disasters because they just loved the Fallout universe. Same thing as I did with Morrowind and Oblivion and Fallout 3. My thing is here, ladies and gentlemen, is why even say this? It's like a little too late now. Vegas and all these other games have been out years and years and years. Most people are kind of betting that Dungeon Siege 3 might have some glitching issues if it's done on the same engine, which supposedly it wasn't. So now I turn to you, Young Glacinator. to give us any thoughts you want on that. I just thought I'd bring it up to the audience because it seemed kind of late and kind of stupid to do.
Yeah, wasn't New Vegas released like in November or something?
Yeah, November 2010. Yeah.
Why are you saying this now? that's my only question. It's such a random time to say it. You could have said it when it was happening. But I really don't have anything to add to this, just besides that it's sort of late. But this is a funny story though. I was watching my brother play, New Vegas, cause I like to watch him play the Fallout games. It's amusing. We like the music. And he had, there's this one mission where he had to carry a dead body from point A to point B. And he walked over a hill, and all of a sudden the dead body disappeared, and he shot up into the air like a rocket. And he was above the rendered map, like in the sky. Like, it was so weird. And then he took like 5 steps and he fell all the way back down again. And he hadn't saved for like an hour. So he had to start all over again. So I don't really have anything to add to the story besides that. This is late, and the glitches are hilarious, even though there are a lot of them.
Your brother really should have just walked on, and I don't know which particular brother it was, but he should have really just walked up to a wall and beat his head against it, because one thing you should know from the onset of playing a Fallout game or a game Biro Engine in general game is you do not go an hour without saving. You go about 10 minutes at most. Or anytime you move into new scenery or doing something new. I probably saved Fallout 3 49,000 times just because I knew what was going to possibly happen.
Have you seen the face glitch?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Fallout 3 is getting cheap enough that I might pick it up, or not Fallout 3, excuse me, Fallout New Vegas is getting cheap enough. I might pick it up here in a bargain bin pretty quick because it's been patched just enough that it's at least playable, and I am curious to see how they did with it. Patrick, your thoughts on Better Late Than Never, or should have just kept his mouth shut and hyped Dungeon Siege 3?
Yeah, well, I think he's maybe trying to reassure people that Dungeon Siege 3 won't be a piling heap of glitchy mess is all he's doing here. I guess it's better late than ever to apologize. That's what I thought at first, but then when you started listing off all of those games, I was like, wait a minute. It's not like it was just one game that they had this problem with. It was a slew of games. So, I don't know. I think all he's doing now is just trying to reassure people that all those glitches will not be in their next game.
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't remember Morrowind having the huge, like, core shattering glitches that, like, Glacinator was talking about in Fallout Vegas, but 3 had it. Oblivion didn't have too many, although I was riding along the edge of a mountain and all of a sudden my horse was riding in midair, and I was just running along with no ground underneath me. And I just kept doing it because I figured sooner or later I'd either fall to my death or it'd find ground again, or the textures would pop back up. So, I mean, yeah, and the thing is he should have mentioned that the new engine they're using, and that they basically, remember we did the story, I did it because I wanted to make fun of the engine. They got rid of that engine, they quit using it, and they were trying to sell it. Why, I don't know, because it's no good for anything. They should be commended to a certain extent because they sold a shit ton of games on the probably one of the worst gaming engines in the early 2000s on up to today. I mean, Oblivion, Morrowind, Fallout 3, and Fallout Vegas combined probably sold a lot of games, and they made a lot of money on an engine that was just a screaming piece of shit. So, but folks, if you are interested in Dungeon Siege 3, like I am, I would be more optimistic, because I know the engine that was used for Fallout New Vegas has been, hopefully it's had a bullet put in its head, so, and I think it would have probably been a better use of this gentleman's time to hype Dungeon Siege 3 and show us Dungeon Siege 3 than apologize for a game that came out last year. Moving on from one gaming developer to another. This also comes to us from industrygamers.com. They were the only ones that didn't have super rumor news this week. Valve has moved beyond the episodic content model. Still waiting patiently for Half-Life 2 Episode 3, Valve president Gabe Newell told Develop that the company has moved beyond the episodic content model and has begun to see games as a service as the next big thing. We went through the episodes phase, and now we're going towards shorter and even shorter cycles. For me, entertainment as a service is a clear distillation of the episodic content model. Games as a service provides a base title that is quickly reiterated through a series of add-ons and updates, not unlike an MMO. Newell points to Team Fortress 2 as an example for future products at the studio. Also, I would also put in there Left 4 Dead 2, and Left 4 Dead 1, and probably Portal 2. Here's the thing. I like the way, I haven't played a ton of Team Fortress 2, but I like the way they kept doing add-ons. A lot of them were free. A lot of them brought the game back to life. Both Left 4 Dead 1 and Left 4 Dead 2 had things like that. I mean, Patrick and I and Audio Master G played a ton of it after both of the add-ons came out for it. We still play it today. I personally think that Valve has done a smart thing by going to this model, especially if they stick with their core traditions of a lot of it being free, even if they have to beat Microsoft over the head with a stick. Patrick, what are your thoughts on Mr. Newell's thoughts?
Well, definitely, you could start to see a shift away from his episodic gaming into this. I'm not 100% sure what he means by using it as a service, so to speak. Is he just meaning shorter and shorter DLC and stuff like that? Is that what he's trying to say?
I think you saying using it as a service was a bad choice of words.
Yeah.
If you look at, and of course there's been no more DLC for Left 4 Dead 2, the best example is Team Fortress 2, which I don't even know when it came out. And there are still, if I popped in Team Fortress 2 from the Orange Box collection that I've got, I guarantee you I could get a good match. Gunsage is bonkers about it still, especially on the PC side, because they just keep adding updates and mods and new hats and new guns and new this and new that. You know, I don't think he's discussing making the game, whatever game comes out, shorter so they can give you more DLC. I think he's just talking about you get a core experience and then we build on to that. Kind of like they did with Left 4 Dead 2 with the two, you know, the passing and there was another DLC in there that I'm not remembering.
There was a couple. And then there's different zombies and stuff, isn't there? Different types of mutations and stuff.
Like, well, right, yeah. If you actually play the online match mode, which we never really got into, there's different things you could do every week, and it just keeps the game fresh.
Yeah.
And a lot of it doesn't cost you money, so.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty much the wave that games are going to be going, especially, I think, PC games. I don't know that much more to say about that, except for I think it's a good idea. If it shortens the time span between episodes and stuff like that, why not keep things fresh?
So you like, as a gamer, you liked what we got with, say, Left 4 Dead 2 and would like to see another game like that.
Oh, yeah, with the updates, I really like the updates, whether it's just extra content or extra weapons or different game types, stuff like that. It's what keeps things, definitely keeps things going, stops it from being stagnant, in my opinion. I think they're on the right track.
Keeps us playing longer, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Glacinator, your thoughts?
Valve has this perfectly right. I have figured that the industry is going to go this route for a long time now, for a lot of reasons. One, because of social games. We found that people like to consume entertainment in smaller and smaller bites, you know, on the toilet, on the bus, you know, whatever. Just quick little bites. We don't necessarily need a 20-hour experience right away out of the box. And so I like that Valve is doing this, making the releases quicker. What you're getting is a smaller bite, and it helps the longevity of the game. It makes it last longer. You can enjoy it with your friends longer. And I see this happening. across the industry, industry-wide thing. It just makes more sense to me. It's more practical. You can have a team working on a certain product for a longer time and still get enough money out of it. And it's also more practical for gamers too, because you can invest that initial money in. And if you don't like it, then you don't have to buy anymore. You're not spending $60 on something. You can spend $10 on it and then just forget about the rest. I mean, like, this experience is not for me. I don't want to deal with this anymore. And so you've only spent $10. So I definitely see this as the right direction. I can't say much more than that. I like this a lot.
Patrick, if Valve gives you a $60 game about the length of Left 4 Dead or a little shorter, are you going to be, as a gamer, as worried about the time it takes you to play the original lease, or excuse me, the original release, if you know more content is coming and most of that's going to be free? Or is that something we need to be concerned about, the actual game getting shorter, the original?
As long as they don't cut it back too much, or you kind of hit it there, as long as the content or most of it or some of it is free, then I don't mind if it's a little bit shorter. A lot of shooter games, stuff like that, are starting to get shorter and shorter and then have paid DLC. So if they decide to give most of the stuff for free, then no, I wouldn't be worried about it. But what we have to kind of worry about, maybe not with Valve, but with other companies, and if other companies start doing it on Xbox and Xbox Live, Microsoft demanding that you pay for pretty much everything, is shorter games and then paying for DLC. But I think with Valve, we might be okay. They have a record of being pretty good at with this kind of stuff.
Gleisnader, same thing. And I'm talking on $60 full tilt titles.
What exactly are you trying to say? I'm confused.
Well, okay. Neither Left 4 Dead was as long as, say, Half-Life 2, Episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
But both Left 4 Deads had a ton of extra content come to them afterwards. Now, I remember with the original Left 4 Dead thinking, just playing single player, wow, that was a bit short for $60. But my mind was changed 2 days later when I started playing the Versus mode and hearing about DLC that was coming for free or for very low price. You know, because once I got on a run in the Versus matches with the crew over at, you know, the community over at Destructoid.com, I mean, shit, that was probably, Left 4 Dead 1 was probably one of the best $60 values, in quite some time in gaming. Left 4 Dead 2 really too. So that's kind of what I'm saying. Does that make sense? Whereas, I'm not getting through to you and I'm not making sense. Let me try this again. I'll cut out.
That's alright. I'm trying to think.
As long as you get a $60 value overall in a set time period, do you care how it comes to you? You know, like a maybe a little shorter game when you originally buy it at GameStop. And
No, I'm fine with that. If I'm getting what I paid for, but it takes longer to come out, I mean, I'm still getting what I paid for. I mean, I'm not in a rush to play games. You know, it's not like my number one priority is like, I need to finish Left 4 Dead or else I won't be happy with myself, you know? Having a longer game is fine with me, and having to wait for some of that content, if it's good content, which is my main gripe with DLC, if that content is good, then sure, why not?
Yeah, see, I'm a little concerned. I'm like Glacinator in that, and I apologize, folks, it took me a long time to get it where it made sense. But I'm afraid other gamers may not find it that way, especially if, like Patrick said, other publishers try to copy Valve's model, except monetizing it way more than Valve has. It'll be interesting to see how industry-wide this gets, but I think it was a natural fit for Valve, and as much as I gave Gabe Newell shit endlessly for slurping up Sony, how'd that work out for you? You know, they are a damn good company, and I think this is going to work really, really well for them. In our last story, speaking of publishers who monetize the shit out of their games, this brought a giant smile to my face. I'm not going to lie. It's one of the few times I became fanboyish and went, oh, this is going to be hilarious. Comes to us from computerandvideogames.com. The headline, Modern Warfare 3 takes on Battlefield 3 with bigger maps, destructible environments. This came to them from Cold Taku, who cares. Basically, it's kind of a little bit of a rumor. The actual announcement for Modern Warfare 3 is May 23rd. They just go on about how it takes off from the storyline of Modern Warfare 2, where you'll now be following Ghost's Ghost as he frolics his way through a woman's apartment. Okay, that last part I'm making up, but it makes about as much sense as anything else I could pull out of their ass. Here's my thing. Please do this, Activision. I mean, it sounds like Modern Warfare 3 was started by Infinity Ward, and now they're taking a clown car approach to finishing it, between, like, Sledgehammer Games and whatever's left of Infinity Ward, and I don't know. I think they're pulling developers out of everywhere. I really want them to do this, because I think they're going to fail miserably at it. And it's, in my mind, it's a huge mistake. EA failed trying to copy Call of Duty to a certain extent with some of their games last year. And Activision is going to fail big time because it took a couple incarnations for the Frostbite engine to get right. It was a little buggy and a little shaky in the original Battlefield Bad Company. And I just cannot wait, because if they do this, and if it's not up to the standard of like Modern Warfare 2 in all areas, it is going to leave their assholes in ruins. And I think it's hilarious. And on top of that, it makes it much easier for me. Because if you're just going to try and make a Battlefield 3 clone, why do I want it when I can buy Battlefield 3 and know I'm going to get a damn good game from DICE? I bet the guys at DICE are just smiling like Cheshire cats hearing this. Okay, fanboy rant over. Everybody knows I've kind of got sick of COD after Black Flops. Patrick, you're the only one in this group that has been contemplating buying COD3 to finish out the story, to see what happens to poor Soap McTavish, or if they resurrect Ghost for the 97th time he was originally Gaz or whatever. What's your take on this, this little bit of news?
Well, it hasn't been 100% confirmed, I don't think, anywhere, but it probably sounds probable that they're gonna be doing this. Heard somewhere else that the rumor is they want to make it the most epic, the final one to be quite epic and to have these bigger environments and to have destructible environments. We don't know exactly what they mean by that. Could just be hype. I mean, look at Gears of War and their quote unquote destructible environments consist mostly of, if you shoot at a pillar beside someone, pieces of the pillar fall off. Not exactly a Frostbite engine worthy destructible environment, but they still talked about that when Gears of War 2 came out. So we don't know for sure what's going on. It does, you know, initially it sounds like they're trying to take a page out of Battlefield's books. I don't know. It's hard to say that. There's a part of me that says, okay, why are they doing this? This could end up not being good. But then you got to look at the other side. Everyone and their dog has been saying, aside from the rabid fanboys of Call of Duty franchise, has been saying Call of Duty is stagnant. Call of Duty's been the same since, I don't know, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops. Now, if this is true, they're saying they're making some changes to it. Now, these changes aren't exactly original and brand new changes, but they're changing it nonetheless. So, if you look at it that way, it's like, okay, it's not gonna be exactly the same then. If the destructible environment rumors are true, you can't hide like you used to in Call of Duty. You can't camp like you always do. They've made changes, even if they're small, to the Call of Duty franchise, and changes is what a lot of people are calling for. So I look at it both ways. I look at it, yes, Bruce, you're right. This looks like a cop-out. They're trying to take some of Battlefield's ideas, and yes, the first time they do it is probably going to end up being glitchy. But on the other hand, I also look at it and say, hey, Call of Duty franchise desperately needs to do something different. They are trying something different, whether it's not original, it's different for the franchise. So right now I'm at a stage, you know, I want to see some video footage. I want to have this flushed out before I make an opinion. It could go either way, I think.
Well, I mean, I understand your counterpoint there, that they're trying something different. With what happened with Medal of Honor last year, these games are coming out at the same time. I mean, if you look at me, somebody who used to love the COD series, and is going to have to make a choice, why do I want to gamble something that could be a glitchy mess that's even easier for the hackers and cheaters to just wreck when I'll have Battlefield 3 that works perfectly fine, as it always does. You know, so that's kind of where I'm going. I mean, I like your point of the destructible environments thing, but I think, won't that bite them worse too? If they continue to hype it like this, and I have it on decent authority that this is, that attempting to be like Frostbite is the direction they're going. Now, I could still turn out to be wrong. I didn't get this from the CNN, but if it is like, you know, they're talking in this story and it turns out to be just you knock little chunks of wall out, isn't that going to bite them too? Because people are going to be expecting it to be more like Battlefield if Activision keeps hyping it this way.
Oh, quite possibly. That's why I was saying I'd need a little more info as to whether or not, you know, when stuff starts to leak, I might have a completely different opinion. Right now, I'm agreeing with you in many ways. Like, look at when, like you said, it's a pretty good point. When EA tried to be Call of Duty, they flopped. So if Call of Duty tries to be Battlefield, they may very well flop too. I'm just waiting for a little more info on it, because at the very least, they're doing something different, and that's something that needs to be done in the Call of Duty franchise. Whether it's going to work or not is to be determined.
You're correct. I mean, we are going to revisit this, as much as I'm sure some of our listening audience hates that, but I just couldn't pass it up.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
There was no way. It's like, really, Activision? All right. Glacinator, your turn, a non-COD fanboy, and I know a big-time Battlefield fanboy. What's your thoughts on this?
I don't care. I really don't. I was done with Modern Warfare with the first one. The experience I had with it was good, but I didn't think any more of it. Modern Warfare 2 was glitchy. Why should I buy Black Ops? I didn't. They can do whatever they want, and I will not buy it. So this has no effect on me whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same camp as you. The story in Modern Warfare 2 really took a nosedive. If you look at the endings and want to be a complete dick, it was pretty much the same ending as the first one. It's really going to be hard for them to pull a good story out of their ass. And now I'm hearing a combination of this and other things that I may think. I've been hearing other things that I think may come back to bite them in the ass, so we will have to see. Patrick is correct. We do need more information, but, you know, Mario helped me. I couldn't pass this story up. There was no way. And that has been news. Let's move on to what I missed. Let's do a little bit of what I missed this week. Glacinator, did I miss anything that you'd like to bring up?
I've been AFK for a while, so I really do not know.
Nothing? Not even any 3DS stuff or Nintendo stuff that I may have missed?
3DS stuff? I mean, E3 is so close. Nothing has really been happening, you know.
That's why this month sucks. In the listening audience, I'll tell you right now, the news is probably going to be horrible for the next 2 or 3 weeks because it's mostly like rumor. It's like, I heard this from the dog who was outside of the GameStop headquarters that they got a skew for. I mean, and the big blogs are running with it because they got nothing else to talk about. It's like E3 kind of is becoming a pain in the ass. Patrick, good sir, are you like Glacinator, or do you have something that I missed this week?
Nothing important. There's not a heck of a lot going on this week at all, and I'm thinking the next week or two is going to get even worse, aside from the leaking, you know, speculation and some rumors and hopefully another cool hoax to keep us interested. The only thing I could think of, and it's not really exciting and newsworthy, is apparently, since I'm on a Mortal Kombat kick, if you guys haven't noticed for the last couple days, our last couple episodes, Mortal Kombat, number one selling game in this month. So that's about all that I've got out of it. That's about it. It's pretty slow news week, that's for sure.
Really?
Yep.
So Mortal Kombat was the top chart seller.
Yep.
Was that here in the U.S.?
NPDs, whatever that is. Is that just
who
US?
Smuggled out the NDP numbers? That's North America.
OneUp.com.
Wow, OneUp must be giving head in the bathroom of the Olive Garden. NDP guys. Yeah, I said it. I don't like OneUp, so there you go. That much.
That's okay. They're now IGN.
Yeah, I know. Bringing suck to a whole new level. So you're just gonna pass on or did you not see the other Modern Warfare 3 news about the better monetization and, some company called Beachhead working on extending the play for our players, but you'll still get everything you got before.
Oh, I didn't even see that. Oh, what's that? Their DLC?
It's a rumor, but I got this feeling it's kind of like what we saw at the end of Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Yeah.
You give us 1,200 Microsoft points, we'll level you up to like 6 prestige so you can kick shit out of people day 2.
Yeah.
They're very tight-lipped about it, but all they would say is this Beachhead people... Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Sounds like trouble. It sounds like something that's going to end up killing off COD. I really think COD has fucked itself. Let's see here. Earlier this week, Activision gave the strongest hint yet that this year's Call of Duty release will offer users new paid-for online experiences, although existing ones will remain free as it looks to better monetize its monster FPS franchise. Kotek, everybody's favorite CEO, said Beachhead initiatives will be an integral part to the innovation signature nature of the Call of Duty game, but he would not say anything else. That don't sound good. That don't sound like something that's going to keep gameplay balanced and fun to me. Patrick, since you're contemplating playing the game and you've played a lot of the COD titles, does that give you pause for concern when they're talking about stuff like that, or is it just going to be more overpriced DLC?
I think they're just going to be adding more DLC from what I got from it, but they are definitely looking into. They've been saying this since Modern Warfare 2. Other ways, the only way to say it is other ways to take money from suckers, really. But so it's another story. I didn't even hear about that one. It's definitely not surprising, though. Hopefully it's not, you know, day one, hey, if you pay $10, you have all the perks and you can rape everyone. You know, that's just silly.
Oh, I wouldn't. See, that's the thing. I wouldn't put it past them. Like the Battlefield Bad Company one, that came with the Onslaught DLC. And I don't think you leveled up your character, but you could buy, like, all the different weapons, like the Spec Cat stuff. So you could have the most powerful sniper rifle if you were willing to give them, like, 800 Microsoft points. Ladies and gentlemen, what I missed kind of morphed into the part of, or tied into the last news story, too. But I just, hairs on my neck are standing up, man. I just do not have high hopes at all for this. I mean, I know I've been downing on them, but this, they're not making me confident in anything they're doing. They're just, I had a slight interest in maybe buying COD just to see where the story went. A slight, but right now, it makes me feel like I think I'll just buy Battlefield 3 and be really happy playing.
It is wrong, it is dangerous, it is futile.
There you go. Exactly. Danger, Will Robinson. Okay, so that's been what I missed. Remix edition, or they ain't kidding. There is no news edition. Patrick, save us all. Do your spiel and we'll get out of here.
All right, people. For those of you who have visited our website, if you visit it right now, it's currently under, I'm going to say it's under construction. It's being cleaned out. The cleaning crews are there. But normally, if you head over to wonderpodonline.com, you can check out the website. Yes, the podcast is there right at the top, along with our, I guess we could call it sister podcast or our bastard love child podcast, whatever you want to call it there. What the hell is it called? Retropod? That's what it's called. With Gunsage and Sugar Ray Dodge, they have a really good episode 3 up there as well, so check that out. That's at wonderpodonline.com. Lots of content, lots of stuff. Of course, Facebook. Check out our Facebook. I've been doing a few real-time posts during the podcast. I got a few thumbs up on there. Our Facebook page is, unsurprisingly and unoriginally, WonderPod Online. Become our friend. Ask us questions. Do all sorts of stuff. Aside from that, of course, the show that you're listening to is available on iTunes. We'd appreciate the subscriptions or the ratings. We're also on Apple TV if you really feel like doing that. I've checked it out. It's kind of interesting. And you can download the MP3 at WonderPodOnline.com. So if you don't like Apple, there's another way to do it. Aside from our website and our Facebook. What else do we got? I'm running low on here. We're on YouTube. There's some highlight reels. There's a new one probably going to come up in a little while if I get off my lazy butt. And we have an email address, which is listeners' favorite to send us hate mail. What is the email address, Mr. McGee?
It is wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Until episode 64, the, oh, Lord, we might not have any news at all, and you'll have to hear Patrick tell us about the time he went to a chicken farm. I am Bruce McGee, and I'm freaking out of here. See you, people. Chicken farm? I don't know where the fuck that shit even comes from sometimes. Chicken farm?
I don't know.